least watch and participate that way as well. So that would just be another avenue. But for folks who want to not just listen and actually want to ask questions, doing it over Zoom would be the way to go.
Okay, well, I need a motion to set this hearing date for May 4, I need a motion and a second for that, and then we'll vote on that.
And it is 30 days? It's not. It's the 30-day notice?
If we were going to have it on May 1st, April, if it were published on April 9th, I think that only has to be 15 days, doesn't it, Ben?
Let me see if I can find that real quick. I don't know that off the top.
I thought it was longer.
I can find it.
Not less than 15, nor more than 120 days.
Okay. No, the amount of time for the notice.
Yeah, not less than 15, nor more than 120 days. So you could do 15 days.
So we can easily get it in the paper on the 9th of April, and we'll put it on the website and put notice in the various locations, and we're legal.
Yeah, so, if I may just interject, sorry, I think Scott's suggestion of a live stream is a good one. I've heard a couple of folks note that they had trouble attending the prior two hearings, and I think making it widely available, especially under the social distancing circumstances, would be a good move.
Personally, I'm technologically deficient, and I will defer to yours and Scott's thoughts, and I hope you can also organize it, because I am really technologically deficient in that regard. And I think that's a good suggestion. We still need a motion to set this hearing date for May 4.
So moved.
Second.
All those in favor, Chuck?
Aye.
John?
Aye.
Steve?
Aye.
Scott?
Aye.
And myself, aye. I will get a notice together with Ben's help, and we will get it in the Standard for the week of April 9th and get notices up on the various locations. And Cindy will help me get those posted and get into the Standard. And we will go from there. Karen, we hope we've given you your answer. Now we're back to, so we got the zoning thing done. Now we're back to painting the town garage. I was hoping to have a second bid from, I seem to be having difficulty. I had one from the same gentleman that did the town hall. Unfortunately, and I also asked Tim Levitt to give me a bid. Unfortunately, that did not come. He looked at it several weeks ago, but he did not give me the bid. And so we have to make a decision here as to whether we want to continue on and wait for his bid, or whether we want to go with the gentleman that gave it to us, this Dennis Wright from that did the town hall painting. His bid was for $8,600 to do the town garage, which included replacing clapboards, then $875 to do the fuel shed. If we wanted the town hall painted, that was going, the rest of the town hall that didn't get painted before, that would be $3,200. The reason I put this on is if we're going to get anyone to paint that this summer, we need to lock them in. And I told him we had a meeting tonight. I emailed him back. I said I would confirm one way or another. The town garage really needs painting. The town hall probably could wait another year. And there again, I've been trying to get these bids, and I cannot seem to get those. So what does the board want to do?
I would recommend one of two courses of action. One is we wait until we know what our FY20 position is so we can have a better sense how we're going to end the year and whether we could pay that out of operating. Or,
well, you, when we discussed this during budget time, this was all going to come out of building reserve.
So that was going to be my next recommendation, is that we pay for it out of the building reserve.
Well, that was what, when we discussed this in the budget, and I put it in the highway budget for next year, you said no, that that should come out of the building reserve. And so this really has no effect on, this has no effect on the budget either this year or next year, because it isn't there.
That's fine. If we're going to pay for it out of the reserve, that works for me.
Yeah, I think we need.
Do you want?
We need to do it and get it done and protect the building from any further degradation at this point. And if it's coming out of the building reserve anyways, we've got the money, so we should just make it happen.
So do you want me to commit to Mr. Wright at this price, or do you want to wait for Tim Leavitt? I called him twice. I finally, and I said, you know, you've got to get me this bid in hand here. And that was, I called him over the weekend. He said he would do that. And I believe in using local people, but I think we need to get somebody lined up, or it won't happen this year either, and it needs paint.
Well, if we made a good faith attempt to get quotes, I think we should just move on.
Okay, so, and
Emily,
do you want to... go ahead.
I would just like to add here, Emily, that I do have this estimate from John, which included replacing, you know, the clapboards and redoing the shed where the fuel tank is and all of that stuff as well.
And how much was that for?
Do you want me to read the whole thing or just give you the number?
What's the bottom line?
$7,800.
If that's the case, I have, and I've also asked John Syme, and he said he would get me a new quote. He had an old quote, which didn't include doing anything with the fuel shed and nothing with the timber on the side, the sill that needs to be replaced. I assume that was in John Morgan's bid as well.
What I'll do, Emily, is I'll just read it so that everybody can hear it and it's clear. So
okay,
the scope of the work includes replacing 14 feet of sill on the south side of the garage, finishing the fuel shed, including reframing it, clapboarding it, adding one roll door, and adding hinge door panel, it says, and also re-nailing and replacing clapboards as needed. The materials were going to be, the clapboards were going to be a pre-primed spruce, and any of the stuff for trim was going to be a pre-primed solid pine. And that price was $7,800.
Does anybody have any questions? I have a bid from John Syme 2 years ago, which did not include redoing anything with the fuel shed, which is basically just right now kind of, would you call it, John, a tacked-on structure of plywood with nothing supporting it?
Yeah, pretty much.
Pretty much?
Yeah.
And so that had nothing to do with that, and I believe that was... $6,500 or maybe $8,200. It was to get the whole thing and the fuel shed done and the sill replaced. All John was talking about was just replacing the clapboards. I think that we probably have got a pretty good bet on getting John Morgan to do that work for $7,700.
$7,800, just to be clear.
And Dennis Wright's would have been... I think I total up $9,575 for doing the same work.
No, for Dennis Wright, including replacing needed clapboards
right.
at the town garage, it would be $8,600 for the town garage
right.
and $8,75 for the fuel shed.
Okay, so $9,475.
Yes, and but that could be a significant, a little bit less if we already had the clapboards replaced.
Okay.
Because his included replacing some clapboards. So if we already get that, if that's already done, that price could be a little bit less. But I'm just amazed that anybody will paint it for $9,500, to be honest. It's a pretty large building.
But the John Morgan quote was $7,800 to do all that, including clapboards. No?
Yes, but no painting.
No painting.
Uh-huh. Okay.
John, but there, you see, there's a sill there that needs to be replaced.
Yes, right, right.
That's brought it out. And Jim has dug the dirt away from it now, and so that it shouldn't rot again, but it was the road got pushed up against it, and it rotted.
Yeah.
So,
so I would make the motion. I would make the motion that we have John Morgan do the work that he presented in his bid, and then have John Symes, correct, to do the painting.
No, John would have done the structural work, but he did not include on his bid 2 years ago. There was nothing said of the nothing said about the sill that needed to be replaced.
Okay, so John Symes was a carpenter. Oh, okay.
Dennis Wright is the one that did the painting at the town hall and gave us this estimate.
Okay, so I'll redo the motion. We'll hire John Morgan to do the work as he presented all of the dealing with the wood structures, and then have Dennis do the painting.
I will accept that. I will second that. Does anyone want to discuss this any further?
So what is the bottom line? How much are we paying altogether?
Five, seven, 16, 24, seven, five, seven, 17,415 dollars. $475, excuse me.
I would recommend that we award these bids separately, you know, one to one person, one to the other, in separate motions and with the amounts specified.
That's fine. Would you like to rework your motion, John, Steve?
So I move to hire John Morgan to do the work presented in his estimate for $7,800.
I will second that motion. All those in favor, Chuck?
Aye.
John?
Aye.
Steve?
Aye.
Scott?
Aye.
Emily? Aye. All right, and I will move that we hire Dennis Wright to do the painting at the town garage, which is $8,600 for the main part of the garage and $875 for the fuel shed, which would make it $9,475. Need a second?
I'll second that.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Chuck?
Aye.
John?
Aye.
Scott?
Aye.
Steve?
Aye.
Myself, aye. Okay, I will...
I don't know if... Oh, Cindy's still there. Can we make sure we get a copy of the bids in our minutes?
Yes, I do not have the John Morgan bid, but I will. I believe I sent that bid from Wright to you, but maybe I did not. But I will send it to Cindy and all of you tomorrow or later tonight. Do you want to do anything about painting the back of the town hall this year?
And I will scan this at this point in time from John Morgan and get that out to everybody. So.
Thanks.
Do you want to do anything about painting the back of the town hall this year? That would cost us $3,200 extra from this Mr. Wright. And Tim Levitt also looked at that, and he, when I spoke with him this weekend, well, he might have to get a lift. That was going to be hard to do, and one thing and another. And I did not get that bid in either. He didn't send me anything, even though I requested it yet again. It needs paint as well. We don't have to do it this year. That also would come out of the building reserve.
While we've got Dennis in town, let's just get it done.
I don't know how bad it is. Is it bad or is it?
They're part of it that when they did the roof, when Twin State did the roof, they had to put new clapboards on the back for some reason.
Yep.
And I don't believe, to be honest, I had just had my second knee done, so I didn't walk around behind it when I took Mr. Wright up there to look at it. That being said, I don't believe some of those clapboards on the back that Twin State put back on have even been primed. The very back is the side that when they did the windows, the side that was facing the town hall was done, but the rest of it was not. And there's no paint on the back of it to speak of. It's pretty bad.
Okay. Well, it sounds like we should get it done then.
Okay. I need a motion then. Or I move that we have Mr. Wright paint the back of the town hall for $3,200, his quote.
Second.
All those in favor, Chuck? Chuck? John?
Aye. I think we lost
Chuck. Have we lost everybody?
No, we lost Chuck.
Maybe he'll come back. John?
Aye.
Steve?
Aye.
Scott?
Aye.
Emily is an aye. Is Chuck back yet?
No, he's not back yet.
Okay, well, let me know when he comes back. That's passed as well. I will let Mr. Wright know that he's good to go and put us on his schedule for the summer. And Steve, will you contact John Morgan?
I will.
That would be great. Next on the agenda, we have the TA-60. I sent that to you guys 2 weeks ago. Did anybody take a look at that? Did anybody look at the worksheet in of SharePoint?
I looked at it. I went back and looked at our past TA-60s, and we haven't exactly been consistent over the years. And
the methodology that I followed was the same methodology that Frank used last year, and I put on that worksheet my figures that corresponded with the way he did it the previous year.
No,
I did not look further back than that.
Yeah, I understand. It's the thing that caught my eye is that we're treating reserve expenditures as income rather than expenses. And without getting into the minutiae, there's just a lot of ping pong that gets played. And that's where the inconsistency is that in some years in the past, we put contributions to the reserve side on the expenses side rather than the income side. So that was what caught my eye. But if we're going to treat it as income, we probably also need to count down on the expenses side what we're going to spend out of the vehicle reserve for the two trucks we're buying. Just to show that we are going to spend money out of those vehicle reserves, out of the vehicle reserve.
Well, I can put that on. There is no place for that other than I can put that down under comments indicate that we will be spending $300,000 out of the paving reserve and X number of dollars, whatever it is. I can't remember the figure off the top of my head, but I can go back and look out of the vehicle reserve for purchases in this next fiscal year.
Yeah.
And that probably gives a much more actual accounting of the situation. I felt also that gave a rather jaundiced view of our income versus our expenses.
The other thing that's not in there is the $90,000 that's going into the paving reserves.
Well, the reason that is not there is because that is money that was previously collected. That's a surplus. That is a fund balance. That is not money that we. That isn't money that we have raised, and it is not income because we haven't raised it.
No, basically what this TA-60 is a statement of assets and liabilities. And so you would, I understand what you're saying.
No, it isn't. It's income and expenses. And those two things are not the same.
Well, they are.
Well, no, they're not. No. An asset is not income, necessarily. We cannot, that $90,000 that we are going to use and put into the paving reserve that came from the fund balance was in last year's taxes. That is income that we raised last year. That is not income that we are raising that this year. It is money that we have.
Whether it gets recorded is not determined by whether we raise it in taxes. It's where it goes. And that money is going into the paving reserve. The other thing that's not in here that needs to be recorded is the $175,000 for paving. Because that now that we have official word, it should be recorded in here as well.
I'm not sure that is correct. I would have to think about that one.
Yeah,
we can put this off. We have 60 days to do this, so we can put it off another 2 weeks. But I really do not believe that to be quite honest, if you get right down to the nitty gritty of it, that $856,341 is included in that $77,600 for the vehicle reserve and the $300,000 for the paving reserve, if you want to get technical about it.
I'm sorry, say that again.
The $856,341 that are town tax funds are included in that figure is $77,600 and $300,000 for the paving reserve.
Yeah, maybe. I'd have to double check that, but that sounds
right. Well, you know they are. That town tax fund is the highway budget.
Right.
That is. So
right.
That's okay. $77,600 and the $300,000 are included in that $856,000.
All right. Well, it sounds like we have some work to do on this, and we have some number checking to do that.
But this is the template that this is how Frank did it last year. Whether it's right or wrong, I don't know. But I can also get some guidance from someone else. So we'll leave that off till the next meeting. Okay. I would suggest. Okay.
Actually, before we move on, I think Chuck, you just rejoined. Chuck. Can you hear us? Hey, Chuck, can you hear us? Chuck?
Why doesn't somebody try and email him and see if he's still there?
Are you talking about me?
Yeah, okay.
Yeah,
my battery died, and I had trouble getting back in. All right, I'm back.
Okay.
We're glad you're back, Chuck.
Yeah.
Okay.
Oh, me too.
We're no longer going to discuss the TX50. We have here on compensation policy. That was something that Todd and John was working on.
Okay.
John, you want
what
me to...
What do you guys have
yeah,
for
yeah,
that?
Go ahead, Scott, because you've probably got it, what you wrote up in front
okay.
of you. So.
Okay. So John and I spent some time talking about it. I think, let me find the notes here. So right now, I can share my screen just so everybody, for anybody who's on the computer, I'll share my screen. So you should be able to see my screen right now, which is an email to John after our meeting yesterday. And let me know, for those who are on the computer, can you see it okay?
I can see it.
Okay, great.
I'm not on my computer, so I cannot see it.
Okay. I'm just going to go down where we're at. So I think what we'd like to do is recommend to the board that we start with a really basic structure, one that's not too complex. So just as background, the way this typically works is especially in the government sector, consultants are hired, like Teresa that we have on contract. You would hire somebody like that, and she would go to put together a survey of different comparable towns and come up with a structure for different positions and pay levels at different, you know, gradations. And there are lots of them out there. Norwich has done some, Woodstock, Hartford, a number of towns in Vermont. I got one from Morristown. But I think the long and short of it is that maybe we start more simple than that, just to get ourselves up and going. And basically it would be a three-level structure. Basically it would be sort of your base, green employee, and then you have sort of a mid-level employee, and then you have a seasoned or well-experienced employee. And the way we conceived of it is that for each level, there would be associated, and for job description, there would be associated skills that are required for each level. And having it to be three levels would keep it simple, and we would figure out what the proper wage is for each of those levels. And so what John and I talked about is, even though this is sort of a simplistic approach, what we would do is that, say, for example, you had somebody who is maybe more skilled than mid-level, but not quite to your third highest level. Well, that's where we as a board can make a judgment call. But at least we've got some nice fences we can work within that says, yeah, they're above this level, but they're a little bit below this level. Here's what the right pay level is for this person. And I think that makes a lot of sense. And that's that second bullet point that says for merit increases where someone might be in between levels, the board would make a judgment call on what the appropriate increase would be. And I think if we want to kind of do this kind of bootstrap method where we're pulling together this data ourselves, we could simply look at the VLCT compensation survey and figure out for the different job positions what the right pay is for each of the three levels I'm describing. We could do that on our own. Ideally, you hire somebody like Teresa to do it, but we could probably figure it out. We would just have to work through, and we'd have to talk about it, what the right levels are. So that's how do we get to like a solid, you know, three levels that we can work from. And the reason for doing this, of course, is that so that we're not grabbing pay wages out of thin air, that there's some coherency to why somebody's getting paid a certain amount. And it's relative to other towns, it's relative to their job description, it's relative to their skills. So that's our first recommendation. The second one is about a couple of different approaches on how to do merit increases. So one approach is that we have everybody's performance appraisals be due right around the same time of year every year, and we just have a big performance review period, and we get it done before budget season, so that once we finish everybody's performance reviews and figure out what their wage increase is, we can build that into the budget. That's one approach. The other approach is that when we put together the budget, we just put in a sort of a best guess for what we think we might pay out in wage increases, and that be a separate line item in the budget. And then we don't have to peg people's performance appraisals to one time a year. We can do them as they come up based on anniversary date, and we would have that flexibility where, you know, if somebody, for example, their performance appraisal falls in February and they're due for a pay increase, we can do it in February. We don't have to wait. So there's some advantage there. So I think that would maybe I'll pause there to get some feedback from other folks, like which approach might be more appealing. You know, doing performance reviews all at one time and building it into the budget, or putting a placeholder in the budget and doing pay increases as they come.
I'll go and just reiterate basically what Scott said. I mean, we were in agreement with everything, with these bullet points that he sent to me, which you're now looking at. And to me, that's how we do it at my employment. And to me, it makes sense to have everybody, regardless of when they start, to have their annual review all at the same time, so you get in that mindset of now's the time to do it, and you're less likely to forget about when you're going to do it, instead of having, you know, one in April and then another one in July, and then you've got one in December. And if you kind of just all make them the same time of the year, it makes things more simplified.
I agree with that. I would like to, I'm not on the computer, and I would like to see the proposal. So maybe if you could send it, we could kind of mull it over and maybe figure it out at our next meeting. I cannot see what you're talking about. So I don't.
There's no numbers yet. This is all kind of, we're trying to get the structure in place, and then we can figure out numbers.
Well, that's fine, but I can't even see your structure. So basically, you're talking to someone who can't even see what your basic structure is, let alone your money items. And so, for me, the conversation is very nebulous, and I don't think we're going to.
Do you just want to wait then, Emily, till
you're I think we all need to look at what you have done, and in order to make some kind of intelligent comment, you kind of got to look things over and figure out where you're going. I am not on my computer, so I don't even see what you're talking about. If everybody else is, if you send it to me, I'll catch it later. But I don't think this is, I put this on there because I thought we had to get started on it, and I knew you guys were working on it, but I don't think we're going to get it figured out tonight. It's already, you follow?
That's fine. Why don't I just carry on with a couple more bullet points? And I think I lost the share screen, so I'm going to share it again. I'll just cover some of the other bullet points, and we can take it up later. The other thing to go hand in glove with merit increases is you know, when we do cost of living adjustments. And I think that should be done the same time every year, because that's typically driven by inflation, and you want to peg it to the same time with inflation. So, you know, whether it's beginning of the fiscal year or whenever, I think it would be advisable that we do cost of living increases the same time every year. So some of the open issues that we can discuss next time, that is, you know, we have, so going back a couple of years in conversations, one of the risks that we have right now is that we have a number of people who are serving in elected or appointed positions, but they're paid an hourly wage. And the law doesn't really care whether they're elected or appointed. Labor law doesn't care. And so if somebody in the eyes of labor law is an employee versus something else, there are things that we have to be careful of. And one of them is whether we're paying somebody an hourly wage. So a couple, you know, whenever it was a couple of years ago, we asked Jill Muir to review our personnel policy and our pay policy. That was one of the things that came out, among other things, that it's possible that by paying even an elected or appointed official an hourly wage, that in the eyes of labor law, they might start to look like an employee. And then that opens up things like workers' comp and sick and vacation time and et cetera, et cetera. So one of the things that we'll need to grapple with in the context of a compensation plan, what's the rationale for paying some people, some elected officials, a stipend versus an hourly wage? And not to get into it tonight, I'm just laying this out for later discussion. And then the next one is, how would a compensation plan apply to those who aren't, quote, employees, but nonetheless receive an hourly wage or stipend? So if we have someone who, like a lister, for example, who is paid an hourly wage, are they too eligible for the compensation plan because we set their pay? And then the last bullet point kind of goes back to the top of what we were talking about. How will we decide what the wage amounts are for each level? For example, do we take a simple low, medium, median, and high for each position in the VLCT compensation survey and filter out anything that looks like anomalies, and then kind of we're done? Or do we factor in other things like the size of the town or roadway mileage or whatever? Are there other variables that we should take into consideration when setting the base wage for each level? So that will be something I think John and I can work on that more and bring some proposals to the table on that. But, you know, like I said at the top, we have the VLCT compensation data. We can do it DIY if we want, or, you know, ideally you have somebody who's more skilled at this, but we can, you know, we can take a swag at it for sure. So I think that's all we've got for tonight. Any questions?
That's more than we had before. Thank you.
All right, so I'll stop sharing my screen.
So next on the list is Davis and Valerie complaints regarding tax penalties. I think, Scott, you wrote to VLCT and sent stuff back to us. I sent those to you because I felt you should know, just as I knew or was given the information that these two people had complained. I don't feel there's anything we're going to do about it. Those things are set by the town body at town meeting. They're well known, and they've been that way for years. It's nothing new, but I thought you ought to be aware. And they've been given documents if they wish to do anything more. And that's the reason I sent you those things, and that's the reason it's on the agenda. But I don't feel there's anything we're going to do about it. There's nothing that legally we can do about it. Any other comments? Okay, moving on. You have a Point Road Commissioner. I don't know who put this on. I did not. Anyone want to speak to that?
No, we don't need. Well, actually, yes, I will speak to it. We are. I double checked this. Over time, sometimes you forget and remember things. But I did check with BLCT, and we do actually, by law, Steve was right. We are required to have at least one road commissioner. But what I would like to propose to the board, as I did over email, just to solve this problem in the simplest way, I'd like to move that we appoint Jim Potter as the road commissioner so that we fulfill our statutory obligation. And like I said in email, we don't need a job description. He's already doing the job description. So that satisfies our legal requirement, and we can move on.
Any comments? Are you still there, Jim, or are you gone?
He's gone.
I think before we do this, we should discuss it with Jim and see whether he would even take the position or under what conditions he would take the position.
Well, there's no, but that's the point, Emily. There is no position. There's no job description. There's nothing he would have to do as the road commissioner. He would be the road commissioner in name.
It'd be a name.
Well, for some reason, go ahead.
It'd be a name only, correct, Scott? From what I read from your email before, is that we decide what the road commissioner is responsible for. So if we give them no responsibility, they have no further responsibility than, or if Jimmy was the road commissioner, unless we assigned responsibility as the road commissioner, he would have no more responsibility than what he has now.
That's correct.
Yeah.
Well, for some reason, in the last 10, 12, 15 years, they haven't had the road foreman be the road commissioner. It's been two different things, and I don't know why that is. I don't know whether there's a legal reason for that or not, but in the last 10 years or so, the road commissioner and the road foreman have not been one and the same. The second thing that I would say is that if indeed we're going to appoint Jim as road commissioner, which may be a good idea or may not be a good idea, I do think we need to discuss that with him in advance. It may not be something that he wishes to do. He may be willing to do that with certain conditions, but you don't just appoint somebody out of the blue without discussing it with them prior. Just like we wouldn't have appointed just any Joe Blow to fill the position at the supervisory union without asking for interest and whether someone would be willing to serve.
Well, I just again want to point out that there's I did copy Jib on the email, so hopefully he read
and
it.
And did you get any comment back?
No, he didn't object or concur. But, you know, I guess a couple of things I would say is, actually, Jim has been the road commissioner before. He was the road commissioner last time. So I think he was both the road foreman and the road commissioner before, because I have seen plenty of minutes and other records that have Jim Potter as being the road commissioner. So it's not... I guess what I'm saying is it wouldn't be the first time he's been the road commissioner.
And I think what happened when before, for whatever reason, what my understanding is there was a select board member that maybe there was a difference of opinion or something along the way. I'm not sure of that, but felt that – that title from Jimmy.
I think that's correct. This is Chuck. I tend to remember that the road foreman and the road commissioner were the same person for years and years and years. But having said that, we should certainly discuss it with Jim first and have him tell us, I'd like to do that or I would prefer not.
And I guess my only other question would be also, Scott, is would like to see is if we do that, there is some stuff that Jimmy's been doing and Emily's also been working on it with him. So with that, I would also want to see like a point of contact maybe for Jimmy on the select board named so that, not in a supervisory position, but if he's got some questions such as he's been doing already with Emily, that resource is still there.
Yeah, that's another subject I'd like to talk about. Maybe not tonight, but so a lot of towns have what they might call liaisons. So you have, and you can give it different names, but there might be a highway liaison, the select board. There might be a fire department contact. There might be an HR contact. There might be, for different functional areas, each member of the select board gets assigned to those functional areas, and they don't have any official titles or anything like that. They're just sort of the point person for different areas. And I think that's kind of what you're getting at. And I would like to see us have a conversation about roles and responsibilities and in that same vein that you're describing, Steve, where if Emily's sort of serving in that liaison role now, it doesn't necessarily have to be the road commissioner. It could be. We would have to define it. We'd have to define it for anybody.
Right.
So I think that's sort of, I guess what I'm saying is that's sort of a larger conversation, not just about highway, but we should talk about who the various points of contact are for the select board on different subject areas.
I agree.
Yeah. I mean, I think not to...
And with that, I think that's very helpful. That way we don't get multiple select board members calling different vendors and asking the same questions. It makes the select board look unified and having their ducks in a row and it just makes the whole town government look a lot better.
Well, I don't know what you're referring to if you're talking about.
No, I just mean just in general when we appoint somebody to do a specific thing so that no matter who it is, when you got outside vendors and outside people hearing from the same person every time, it just makes it smoother and simpler. You get a relationship there and I'm not picking on you personally. I'm just saying instead of you calling somebody and then me calling somebody and then maybe Chuck calling the same or the same, we all call the same person and asking a same similar question. You know what I'm saying?
Relationships can be really helpful.
Exactly. That's my point. Yeah. I'm not pointing. That's my point exactly.
Right. Yeah. I agree with that.
Yeah, I also think though that again, we can have this conversation in more detail later, but I guess I'll just say for now is that we're kind of unbalanced in that right now, and maybe we can find a way to get balanced on that.
So I think what we need to do is we need to talk with Jim about this. Sure. And see how he feels about it.
That's fine.
For dealing with that particular issue.
That's fine. No, I don't have any issue with that.
Okay, then let's move on to rules of procedures. You wanted that on, Scott?
I did. Yeah, so there's a couple things. Maybe I care about this more than others, but it's important to me. But I, for one, would really like to see the agenda before it gets published. And that's what we agreed to after we amended the rules of procedure last time. And it's, you know, maybe it's just a habit that we need to get into. But I would like to see us adhere to that habit, because I really would like to see it before it gets published. And the reason is that there are things that sometimes they make it on the agenda and sometimes they don't. And if I ask for something to be on the agenda and then it doesn't show up on the agenda, and I don't know that it's not going to be on the agenda until I see the agenda, that's not really great in my mind. I'd like to know that it's not going to be on the agenda, or I'd like to talk about it going on the agenda. Which brings me to my next point, is that, and I don't want to turn this into a contentious conversation, but I think the way our agendas are being crafted is not collaborative right now. And I would like to see us be more collaborative. So, for example, one thing we could agree to do is we're not violating open meeting law if we have a meeting like we're having right now, virtually. We don't even have to leave our homes, and we can talk about what's going to go on the agenda. We can all agree what agenda items we want to put and what we're going to put them on, what order we're going to put them on. And that is perfectly permissible under open meeting law for us to do that collaboratively. And I would like to see us move that direction, especially in this context of COVID-19, where we've got technology like this where we can facilitate something like that pretty easily.
Well, I'll speak to this issue only because Cindy put the agenda out twice. We all saw what everybody had added onto it or not added onto it, and I thought that she had fulfilled the requirement of the agenda going out and what was going to be on it. So I think we're kind of splitting hairs here. In the second instance, I don't recall that in most cases that anything gets left off, that someone doesn't get what they want on the agenda and they get a chance to speak to it. That being the case, two things got left off inadvertently, and I don't know how they got left off, but that sometimes things like that happen, and that you can always add them back in the meeting. I, for one, don't want to spend 3 or 4 days trying to work up an agenda and go back and forth. And I do think that if we do it over email and not in a phone conversation, I think that we are beginning to have, when we start having discussions over email, we're kind of hedging with getting into a habit that we shouldn't get into. And that's my personal opinion. We always seem to add things at the last minute that come up, and I don't see as how that's been a problem as long as we all agree that it can be there. That's just my personal opinion.
Well, I things do get left off. And again, the issue I have is that this has happened more than once, where it's actually happened multiple times, where I've asked for things to be on agenda, and then I don't find out until after the agenda is published that they're not going to be on the agenda. And all I'm saying is I would really like us to be more collaborative about this. So if something's not going to go on the agenda, can we talk about why it shouldn't go on? Can we do it together rather than just it being left off and finding out about it after the fact? I don't think it's splitting hairs to ask to follow our rules, which is everybody gets a chance to see and comment on the agenda before it's published.
And we did get to do that at this last meeting, and we have done that at other meetings. And if for some reason we had a particularly long agenda and I saw something on there that was going to take a long time and it was yours, I have told you in advance in an email why it was not going to be there and why it was not going to get discussed. And you can always add it back on when we get to the meeting if you feel that it just must be discussed. But here it is. It's already 9:30, and we've had a lot of things to go through, and I've still got 4 or 5 items here on my list that we haven't got to yet, and I think there is a point where a meeting can just be too doggone long, and I think sometimes we can talk things to death and back again over and over again, but we get nowhere, and I get frustrated with that. But I do think that Cindy put those meetings out. I think she fulfilled the requirement. She gave everyone a chance to put on the agenda what they wanted. If your things got left off, I apologize, but sometimes things just happen, and I can't say. I did not see the final agenda just before she published it either, so you don't need to think that I saw the final agenda and took 3 or 4 things off on you, because I not saw no more of the agenda than you all did. I got the same emails and the same indications of what needed to be on the agenda that you did, and this is pointed at me, and if you want to criticize, that's fine, but I saw no more emails and sent no more emails back than what you all saw, and I got a chance to put on the things that I felt were important, and I didn't look at the agenda until it came out on Monday, and to be honest, I didn't print it out until this evening, so I had something to go by for this meeting. So, you know, I'm not getting treated any differently than the rest of you.
So, I'd like to make a request of my fellow board members that we try something. Can we at least try 1 or 2 times for the sake of experiment having a meeting like this and not getting into the substance of any agenda items, but simply having a meeting to talk about, hey guys, what do you want to put on the agenda for the next meeting? Let's talk about it. Let's talk about why or why it shouldn't go on. Let's all agree collaboratively what goes on the agenda. And again, that is perfectly permissible to do that under open meeting law. And
if you want to do that, we'll do it at the end of this meeting. Right now, I'm not signing up for another meeting. I'm whether it's virtually on the telephone or anything else, I'm not signing up for another meeting. I get enough meetings already. I have work to do, and I'm not going to spend evenings every evening going through town business. So if you want to decide on what's on the agenda, we will do it at the end of this meeting, and then that'll be the way it'll be. And I'm not going to sign up for another meeting. We have enough meetings as is, and enough obligations to do for the town. We don't need another meeting. So that's my opinion. If everybody else wants to do it, go for it. Because you get to put on there whatever you want, unless there's so much stuff that we don't have time for it. And on those occasions, I personally have told you, you know, we've got a hearing here, and it's going to take at least an hour, which it took 2 hours anyway, and that was when we were dealing with the zoning ordinance. It took 2 hours to get through the hearing, and we didn't get through a good share of the agenda, and if we had put on everything that should have been there, we never would have gotten through. That's just my opinion.
Well, so I think you're making a good point, Emily, because this is exactly a good reason why. And I know people don't like more meetings, but I think if we actually spent the time to plan our agenda more carefully, our meetings might actually be more, they might be shorter. If we did it collaboratively, it might actually result in more efficient meetings because there would be more thought going into what goes on the agenda, and we would all agree and we'd all be prepared. So I guess what I'm trying to say is I know nobody likes having more meetings, but there might be an upside, and all I'm asking is why don't we just experiment 1 or 2 times to see how it goes? I'm not, you know, if it plops, we won't do it again. But if it turns out to be a good idea, let's try it, you know? I mean, we shouldn't be afraid to try new things.
it's a board decision. Anybody want to make any motion, we can do that.
So what are your thoughts on it, Scott? Are you going to do it at the end of each, after each meeting, or you want a completely separate meeting, and when would that be?
You know, what I'd recommend, I mean, it depends on people's availability. I personally am willing to make the investment, but, you know, we could do it on a Thursday, you know, or I don't want to cut into people's weekends, but, you know, the Thursday or Friday afternoon before the following meeting, you know, it's only every 2 weeks. I can certainly find an hour of my day for us to get together and meet like this virtually, not even leaving the house. I think it's time well worth spent. I guess what I'm saying is I think our meetings could go better if we actually put more thought and planning into our agendas. I mean, I do this every day. I mean, I pretty much make meetings every day of my life because that's what I do for a living pretty much. And so I see the results of well thought out meetings and how well they go if they're planned out. But, you know, you guys,
I'm not opposed to trying one or two just to see if it, what does happen.
I mean, let's try it.
I'm not sure what the rest feel, but.
Well, why don't I set it up and I'll invite everybody and, you know, we'll see who shows and we'll give it a shot.
Okay. Does that require a quorum to do that?
No, it doesn't, because it's not a public meeting. No, it doesn't. By definition of an open meeting law, it wouldn't be considered a legal meeting. It's an administrative function.
All right, are we done with this topic now? Or is there any more discussion? Because we've still got three or four more to go.
No, I don't have anything else.
All right. We have a FEMA declaration, EM-3437-BT, that we may qualify for. This is regarding the COVID-19 emergency. Neil has offered to do that work for us, as he did for 4330 or 4550, whichever one he did, the last FEMA event that we had. But in order for him to do that, we have to appoint him as the select board assistant for this FEMA event, EM-3437-BT, set a rate of pay for him, which he is still happy with, $17 an hour, and mileage, which I think last time we used the federal mileage rate. And I would so move that we do that so that if indeed we end up with a lot of expenses with the emergency management situation, that we can get reimbursed for a large share of that through FEMA.
Chuck, I second that.
Any discussion? All those in favor, Chuck?
Aye.
Steve?
Aye.
John?
Aye.
Scott?
Aye.
And I'm an aye. So we've taken care of that. There's a CD that needs to be reinvested for the fire department of $153,000 plus or minus that is coming due on April 12th. I reached out to Kevin. He does not need that at this particular time. And so I need a motion to reinvest that money in that particular fire department account. I believe it's a large equipment account.
Yeah, just use whatever the best rate of return is. But
I don't know what Ellen's thinking is now, because all of the interest rates have tanked.
Yeah, they're probably.
She was.
Point, but.
actually was looking into putting all of these CDs into a sweep account and keeping track of the interest in whatever that comes from the various ones. A lot of municipalities are doing that now, and they take all of those CDs and they put them in a sweep account, and then the bank invests those in various different banks so that you're always covered by FDIC insurance. I don't know what her thought is regarding that at this point, but that is accepted practice, and she is the treasurer. But to get it reinvested somewhere is what we have to decide.
I make a motion to reinvest it based on Ellen's judgments.
I will second that. All those in favor? Chuck?
Aye.
Don?
Aye.
Steve?
Aye.
Scott?
Aye.
Emily, aye. All right. Now, we also never gave Jimmy an answer on this winter vacation thing. And I've talked to a couple of other towns, and for the most part, when somebody signs on to a road crew, they do not get winter vacations from the 15th of November or the 1st of November to the 15th of April. And that's what they sign on for. Towns do if people go hunting in their own home vicinity. They are allowed to take days off if there's no snowstorm or anything to deal with, but they are on call all winter long. And I think until we come up with something different, that has been the policy in the past until Art has taken these two vacations. And I think that we should just make it that this road crew is on call from the 1st of November till the 15th of April. And if there's snow to plow, they're on call. And I think winter vacations are a luxury for us with only a three-man road crew. That's open to discussion, but I would move that we make that a policy regarding winter vacations. And
I think we need to discuss it more, and I didn't contact Downs myself, but I'm sure that is the case, because that is common practice, and it's probably even the same at the state level, and maybe that's how we're going to end up with this. I just think for people that make this a career of potentially 20 or 30 years, that, in my opinion, that's a, for lack of a better word, and an inappropriate word to use, but I'll use it anyways, it's a shitty way to treat your employees. That's my personal opinion, so...
I would add to what John said is that we have a lot of outstanding edits and changes that we need to make to a number of policies. And we've talked about this before in the past about not making piecemeal fragmented policy decisions.
Yeah.
I really think we need to step back from the moment and regroup on particularly our policies that relate to personnel and look at it more holistically rather than kind of looking at it in the moment. We've asked VLCT and Jill Muir and the Municipal Assistance Center to look at our policies. We've gotten a lot of feedback, but we just haven't made the time to dive in and make the changes to our policy. So I think that's where we need to start. And I know that requires a lot of work, but I think it's work that's well worth it if, you know, it's going to pay off in developing the best policies. And so I guess I would just echo John, because whether it comes down how we treat our employees is not just kind of a point issue around winter vacations, but it's kind of holistically looking at what we offer each employee collectively. We should really think carefully about that.
Well, I couldn't agree with you more, and piecemeal things concern me a great deal. However, Jimmy has a request that he has to deal with, and he has asked for some guidance from the board, because we really are running the show, and he needs some guidance. And we can't put that guidance off until we get a new personnel policy written, because this decision that the request that Art has made and the decision regarding whether he can take off a third year in a row during the snowplow season has got to be made fairly soon. He can't wait until August or September to sign up for his hunting trip if that's where he chooses to go, and I assume it is. So we need to, I realize that piecemeal decisions can quite often be poor decisions. In this particular case, Jimmy asked for some guidance. We have not given it to him, and I think that by the time we get a personnel policy reworked, the guidance needs to come before then.
Right.
And so this is why I brought it up. If you don't want to decide tonight, you can think about it a while longer, but this is why I brought it up. He asked for some guidance. He asked for a decision, and we haven't made it.
So
we're reneged on our responsibility. This is our decision to make, not his. So we need to do something in that regard, and I can't wait to have a complete rework of the personnel policy. If you want to put it off till the next meeting, we can probably get away with that. You can think about it. But as a general rule, that's what these highway jobs are. And I didn't contact all 256 towns in Vermont, but that being said, at some point in the very near future, we need to give Jimmy an answer for this. And he doesn't care one way or another. He just wants an answer.
So I think we're kind of overthinking this. Actually, the way I would look at this is our current policy doesn't allow for this. There's no carved out statement in our policy that allows for this kind of vacation. So I don't think there's actually a decision that the board needs to make, because our current policy doesn't permit it. So in my mind, Jimmy is completely empowered to say yay or nay. We can certainly, I don't know that there's a decision for the board to make. I would think that Jimmy is already empowered to say yes or no based upon the needs of you know, the highway crew to decide whether he should grant it or not. But our policy, we don't need to make a policy decision, is what I'm saying, because our current policy doesn't allow it.
Well, that's fine. That is in itself a decision. We stand by the policy. We will not make an exception. Is that all right with the rest of the board? Is everybody on board with that, at least for the short term?
I'm on board with it for the short term.
Yeah, I mean,
John?
I guess...
Saying it that way, yeah, I don't know. I have mixed feelings with that, based on what we've allowed a previous employee to do. If we're discussing specifically as it relates to the employee that's taken the two previous hunting trips, then based on, and granted, we really should be basing it off of the current policy. And so what I'm saying is going to be opinion based, I guess, but. Given where I would like to see the policy and the amount of time that the individual's taken off in the last 2 years, if it were me, I would, yes, deny them the ability to do it again for a third year in the row. I know Jimmy's asked to take potential time off in the winter as well. And given what we've allowed another employee to do, I think it's only fair that we give another employee that hasn't done that equal opportunity to be able to do that, which is why we need to have a policy that does specifically state what we are and what we aren't going to allow, because what we have now doesn't say one way or the other that I'm aware of, so...
I guess the point you raised, John, is a good one, because there's been some precedent.
Right.
I guess since I've been involved with the board, my recollection of when that happened in the past was that it was a discretionary decision. It wasn't, in other words, it wasn't a policy-based decision.
No, it wasn't. The board was never involved, which is fine. Suggesting that
right.
It needed to be, but they weren't. It wasn't a board decision. It was the decision of the road commissioner at the time. So
yeah. So I guess that's kind of how I'm seeing it right now, is that
if we have a proper...
Even though there is a precedent, it was done by discretion of the supervisor.
That's right.
And I guess what I'm saying is Jimmy is empowered to exercise the same discretion now. And I think having hired Jim for the road foreman's position, we're entrusting him to make that kind of discretionary decision. I mean, I guess...
I think that's what we need to do. The policies that we have now don't explicitly say one way or the other, then we really need to leave it up to the person that's in charge of the person asking for the time off.
Right. Exactly. That's kind of what I'm saying.
And then if there's any additional issues raised, then we as a board support Jimmy.
Yeah, so I guess I see our role in this is that if Jimmy in his position, or if we of our own volition see some inequity in how that discretion is being exercised, well, I think that's where we jump in.
Yes.
But otherwise, I think that's why road foremen or supervisors, that's why, you know, that they are hired, because they have that ability to make the judgment calls.
Right. I don't go ask my management team when one of my employees wants a day off, so.
Right.
They ask me, and I ask them when I want time off, so.
So what we're saying is that our policy is that we don't really have a policy, but in that case, that Jimmy fills that void as the road foreman.
Mm-hmm.
And makes the decision.
Yep.
Well, and I guess we tell him that, and
so on him. We do need to commit to coming up with something better than what we have, or. One way or the other, whether it's we allow nothing or we allow something based on a certain set of criteria. That way there's better guidance for everyone as to what we really should be doing.
So to him.
Okay, so we're going to leave that up to Jimmy then?
For now, I guess.
Okay. All right, the next thing we have on here is VLCT, COVID-19. You put that on, Scott?
I did. I think I passed around. If I didn't, VLCT has been generating a bunch of frequently asked questions that are coming up across municipalities in Vermont. And I really, this is just a... something for us to be aware of that is out there, and it's sort of accumulating questions and answers as we go. So I think we should be tapping into that regularly in the midst of COVID-19. One of the things, and the reason why I specifically wanted to talk about it tonight, maybe everybody knows this already, and I'm just repeating what you already know, but we don't actually have to sign orders. So if we, for example, the two orders that we approved earlier in the meeting, there's no signature required on those. the minutes of this meeting are all that Ellen needs to pay on those orders. So as long as we're in this world of operating in COVID-19, we don't need to do any gymnastics about trying to get people to go to the town office and sign the orders, et cetera, et cetera. It just doesn't need to be done. And what we would do, and what we always do already, is record in the minutes the order and the amount and the type of order, and that's all that Ellen needs to pay on those orders. So that's one thing right there that we can simplify on for in the context of COVID-19. And there'll probably be some other, and I don't know if you guys already knew that. I remember it from the past, but this COVID-19 thing reminded me of it. And there's probably some other stuff, too, that will come up that'll be handy.
That would make it easier. I think we can, if she needs those signed, she did express that same thing to me today, that indeed, as long as it was in the minutes and on the recording, that the warrants were approved, that is all that she would need.
Yep.
So we do not have to go up there and sign them in the near future.
Yep.
Anything else under COVID-19? You also had on here, Scott, the Zoom account. Do you want the town to set up a Zoom account, or would you prefer not to?
We're using my business account, which I don't mind. I mean, it doesn't cost me anything extra.
It doesn't make any difference to me if you think that it might be advisable to have a Zoom account for other entities in town to use as well. They also are not going to technically be able to have meetings. I did get a email today from Marge Wakefield regarding the Finance Committee and how she would hold that meeting, and I said that she should talk to you or Becky that we did not have a Zoom account, but that we could get one if we needed to. And so I would move that we set up a Zoom account for the town, at least for the short term, to facilitate meetings during COVID-19.
The basic one is $15 a month, so that's.
So, you know, it's not going to be any significant amount of money.
No.
And if things get back together and we get out of the COVID-19 thing, we could always cancel it at that point.
Well, I'm neck deep in this stuff because now with state government and everybody working remotely, this is pretty, like today, for example, we ran first ever in the state of Vermont, we actually did court hearings over not Zoom, but it was over a different platform. So the same kind of meeting we're having right now, we did actual court proceedings today, and it was kind of interesting. So that's the way the world is going right now. I will say that now that I'm familiar with so many different platforms, we probably don't need to spend any money. I only threw Zoom out because we're on it right now.
Right.
But we actually have a solution that we're already paying for. And it's called, we have two solutions. One's called Skype. The other is called Microsoft Teams. And I would put out there that if we didn't want to spend any extra money, that we actually just use Microsoft Teams. And again, we already have it. We're already licensed for it. It's pretty easy. It's just as easy as Zoom. If anybody wants to use it, I can teach them how to use it pretty quickly.
Can the public call into something like that?
You can. It doesn't matter. You don't have to have a town account. you can invite anybody in the world to it.
Okay. Yeah, I'm game for anything. I'm familiar with Zoom. We use it weekly at work prior to this, and we use it even more now. So, you know, I'm familiar with it, but I'm happy to use whatever.
Teams is super easy, and I guess the advantage to it is we're not signing up for another, you know, another new account for something.
Sure.
That we have to set later.
Well, maybe you could give Becky the information so that she could help Marge, or you could help Marge and reach out to her so that she could use the account to do her finance committee, public trust committee, public funds committee, is what she was looking for, a meeting for, so that you could help her out in that regard so that she could do her meeting. And also... we probably ought to make that known to other town committees and officials that they also could use that.
Mm-hmm. Yep, we can do that.
Okay, anything else on the meeting here? Have I left anything off? I've got notes written all over this paper. Select Board correspondence. I did not go up to the town offices to see if I got any.
Emily, we forgot one item.
Okay. What is it?
I would strongly recommend that we invite Chris Bump to come and speak to us about the town's relationship with District 4. You know, we don't need to get into the weeds on it right now, but he offered to do that, and I think we should take him up on that offer just so we can all hear it at the same time and have a common understanding of, you know, where we're at in terms of our relationship with District 4.
Anybody else have any comment on that?
Yeah, if it's something that he said he was, you know, willing to do, I mean, I suppose it would be nice if we all heard it from the same source at the same time. I'm not personally overly concerned with things, but, you know, that doesn't mean I wouldn't entertain it, certainly if he's willing, you know.
And it was more than willing. He actually said he would like to talk to us.
Okay.
I guess if he would like to do that, I'm not opposed to it. I do think that there was more read into this than what it actually needed to be. I think it was more of a concern factor that, you know, we need to, you know, I think it goes back to our point earlier, Scott, of roles and responsibilities and maybe liaisons or points of contact so that, you know, multiple members of the select board aren't calling and emailing and asking the same sort of questions. It just makes it look like sloppy government. And I know the intent behind that was that, you know, we already had one or two people that basically had been the contact people to Chris or VTrans, and then all of a sudden other people started doing it, and the point of it was to just say that, you know, less people having their hands in the pie is better.
I agree with you, but I'm going to tell all of you straight up right now, if I ever hear anything that doesn't sound right, I'm going to check. And you know, I agree that we should only have one or two people talking to particular contacts outside, but this, what was said about District 4 at the last meeting, and there were two things that were said that stuck with me. One was somebody almost got fired because of Pomfret, and the other is that we're not currently getting the same level of service because we have a bad reputation. And when I hear something like that, that I don't believe is true, I'm going to follow up, and I'm not going to shy away from that. Because that, if you want to talk about making the town of Pomfret look bad, it looks bad when people say things that aren't accurate.
That was an accurate assumption. That was an accurate statement. And quite frankly, when you sent Chris Bump that email trying to check up on what I had said, that was perfectly fine. If he had answered you honestly, he would have lost his job yet again. What did you expect that the man was going to say? Did you think that he was going to agree with you that we had a bad reputation? He would lose his job over that. Did you think that he would agree to say maybe we didn't get as good service because we didn't have a very good method of communicating with him? He would lose his job. What did you expect? And quite frankly, after we discussed that and we said one or two people should contact him and let Jimmy deal with him, and then within minutes you write an email like that, it is embarrassing. It is embarrassing to the whole town of Pomfret that you cannot stay within the realm of what we have all decided as a board. It is embarrassing.
It's embarrassing when you say things that are false.
They were not false, Scott.
They were not.
They were not. There were issues with that culvert down at Dana Road where things were done that were not proper and were not done appropriately, and people got called on the carpet for that, and they did not like that, and that is not a lie. And when you insinuate that I lie, you are over the line. Because that is not something that I do, and that is not something that I will ever do. And when you go there, you are over the line.
Well,
because I do not lie.
You have
lied. I do not. No, I have not.
Yeah, you have.
I can guarantee it. And when you start calling me a liar, you are over the line.
Well, I can cite examples, but
really,
but
I think you better start, and you better start documenting it right now.
I will,
because I do not.
I will. I will document it.
I think you better.
But you're basically saying that Chris Bump's response was not the truth.
I am saying that if Chris Bump's wanted to keep his job, that was the only response that he could give.
If someone
emailed you and said, you're not treating me fairly, do you think that you could send an email back that say, of course not, I'm not treating you fairly, and keep your job? I don't think so. I don't think so.
So, but I want to be clear. You're saying his response was not truthful then.
No, I am saying that his response was quite carefully written, and that was the kind of response that he had to give.
Mm-hmm.
Because he wants to keep his job, and quite frankly, I would expect nothing different. He was very careful in his wording.
Mm-hmm.
Very careful. But we had decided at the last meeting that Jimmy or I would be the contacts, and then you immediately went home and did that.
Yeah, but that was a contact about a completely different subject.
Really?
Yeah. We didn't vote to make you like the single point person for V-Trans. It was one single document. It was to sign one single document.
I don't think that's the case.
In the past, though, Scott, and I've only been on the board for a short period of time, but with that being said, Frank had always been, when he was the road commissioner, he was the contact person for V-Trans, and that carried right on with Emily.
That is not true. I was the contact with V-Trans as well.
At the time when you were sharing that responsibility. And I don't see the point in having multiple people be contact people for V-Trans.
I'm going to tell all of you right now, if I hear something that doesn't sound right, point person or not, I'm going to check. I'm going going to check.
Well, you ought to be checking with the point person first and let them know why you've got an issue and what you're doing before you go and just, I mean, you're really underhanding people, whether it's Emily or anybody else.
Well, it's underhanding the whole select board for one, and then when you have one individual select board member carrying out these kind of acts that can potentially do damage, it's not just doing damage to individual members on the select board, it can do damage to the entire town.
I think it's damaging when somebody says something at a public meeting about our relationship with V-Trans that's not true.
I think that the mistake that was made there was the fact that you didn't come to the next meeting and actually ask more questions for clarification, that you went to V-Trans kind of half-cocked, so to speak, and started sending up these flags again that were unnecessary.
Why were they unnecessary? Because I heard very clearly what was said at that meeting.
What did you gain by writing to Chris Bump? What did you gain, Scott?
I got his perspective on the same issues that were discussed at that meeting.
And what did you expect him to say in order to keep his job? What did you expect that a man who wanted to keep his job and is supposed to treat everyone fairly and everyone above board, what did you expect him to say other than just what he did? He's not an idiot.
Okay, so basically you're saying that he wasn't telling the truth in his response.
I'm saying that he made a very careful comment on your questions, and he was very careful.
That's a very
and simple. I don't blame him. I would have either. And quite frankly, having a half a dozen people, just like if we were dealing with Joe McLean and everybody and his uncle called Joe, not only would it cost $190 an hour, but he would get mixed messages. You've been dealing with Joe McLean, and we have allowed that to continue. And that's fine. No, the rest of us don't call him on a daily basis to discuss things with him because it's counterproductive.
If you guys wanted to, that would be fine.
No, it's not fine, Scott, because it just costs us all money, and it gives the impression that we do not work as a board. And when you wrote to Chris Bumps on your own behalf, not on the board's behalf, it does not give the impression that we work as a board. It means you are an outlier, and you go out on your own and seek opinions and seek comments only for your own benefit, just to check up on other people.
That is
just like
not
when
true.
Just like when you wrote an email to Mike Blakely. Well, I understood that indeed there was a paving grant already in. Is that not the case?
I didn't.
Did write that email.
Yeah,
and I have it in my file.
I'm not denying it, Emily. Look, here's the thing. We are all individual board members. This myth that somehow we have to function in unison at all times is just not true.
You are wrong. And you have been wrong on that from the beginning, and you are still wrong about that. When you speak to, especially to these outside entities, you should speak as a board, as one voice, not as an individual. If you wish to speak as an individual, fine. That's when you do that in the meeting. When you go out and speak to these other entities, you no longer have the privilege of speaking as an individual because you are representing the board. And you did not represent the board with that email that you sent to Chris Bump.
I never intended to represent the board when I sent that. All I intended was to get the truth. Because I heard something at a select board meeting that sounded wrong. And when I hear something...
Why didn't you just call me and ask what indeed the particulars...
If you recall from that meeting, I objected to what you were saying
in that meeting.
And I was not going to tell somebody.
I asked you multiple times.
I will not and was not going to throw under someone under the bus, anyone under the bus in a public meeting. If you had called me privately, I would have told you exactly what happened and the problem was. You did not choose to do that. You chose to go as a board member, actually representing the board.
I did not.
For all practical purposes.
I did not.
Yes. Because when you ask these inquiries, you are representing the board whether you think you are or not.
No, that's not true, Emily.
Did you write that on your own personal email, or did you write it on Poppert BDUS?
Look, I'm an individual select board member. If I want to talk to somebody outside of the town, I can do that. Nobody can stop me.
Nobody can stop you, but it makes the board look like they don't communicate, and it makes it look like we don't have our shit together. If you call Emily, who was the person that knew what was going on, and you don't like the answer that you get from her, and you still think something isn't right, and then you decide to call somebody, I mean, so be it, I suppose. But, you know, start with the bottom up, start with the board, and go from there. I mean, if you just said you wanted to get to the truth, so you obviously thought that the truth wasn't coming from somebody on the board, or you wouldn't have had to call. So,
Here's the thing. When somebody, any one of us, says something at a public meeting about our relationship with a state agency, and that is not, you know, you can't go there. You can't lay that out there in a public meeting and say, hey, we have a bad reputation with B-Trans. Somebody almost got fired because of something Pomfret did. We aren't getting the services that we used to get because of Pomfret's bad reputation. When somebody lays that out publicly in a select board meeting and they don't say why or where it's coming from, that is wrong.
Why didn't you ask me privately, Scott?
I asked you publicly.
Didn't you ask me privately? I will not talk about individuals in a public meeting without them being there, and no one was there from V-Trans. Why didn't you ask the particulars in a private setting?
That
would have been the decent and the logical thing to do.
Instead of going back
and asking and writing that email to Chris Bump.
It makes us all look bad.
And it makes you look bad.
You know what? You made us look bad, Emily, because the right way to handle this from the beginning would have been to put an agenda item on the meeting agenda and invited V-Trans to come and talk to us right away and say, hey, Pomfret, there's a problem with your reputation with us. Let's talk about it. That would have been the right way to handle it from the beginning. But no, what did you do? You said in a public meeting that our reputation is bad, that we're not getting the services, that somebody almost got fired because of Pomfret, and there was nobody there from V-Trans to speak to it. You just put it out there, and that's
excuse me. May I make a comment? I have a point of information.
Sure.
Number one, who's the chair of this meeting?
I am.
Okay, point of information. Is this meeting being run according to Robert's rules?
Probably not at this point.
Shouldn't there be a motion on the floor before any discussion on an issue happens?
Yes, there probably should.
Thank you.
Thank you, Bob.
So I would like to move that we invite V-Trans District 4 to come and talk to us about our reputation.
I'm not going to jump in and second that.
You're not going to?
Nope.
Is there any second? Then I guess the topic is this has been discussed. Is there any other business to come before the meeting? Before we have select board correspondence. I do not know if there was any select board correspondence because I have not been up to the office for a week because it has been closed. Review of assignments. Are you going to work more on the compensation policy, Scott and John?
That would be my intent, yes.
I will get some guidance on TA 60. What other things do we need to get done?
I will be in contact with John Morgan.
And I will be in contact with the painter.
Anything, pardon? We may want to get the painter and the carpenter in contact with each other as well, just so they can know what each other is doing.
I will ask the painter's schedule. He emailed me a few days ago, maybe Saturday or something, asked if we were on his schedule. I will try and get some kind of commitment from him. And maybe you can talk to John Morgan as to whether he could get that done sooner rather than later, so the painter could get in there and get that done.
If I recall correctly, which I'll confirm, John said the 1st of July.
Okay. If that's the case, why don't you talk to him first and then get in touch with me, and then I will get in touch with the painter.
Sounds good.
I would, for the record, I would like Chris Bump's email reply to be put into the minutes.
Well, send it to Cindy then.
Can we do that? I mean, that wasn't part of a meeting.
Well, it's part of our subject. It's part of this agenda item, and I think we talked about that email, and I think the public should have the opportunity to read that email. And it, plus, it's a public document anyway. I think it needs to be part of the record here.
We need a motion then to put that on, and then we'll vote on that.
Why is it any different than any
other? It is obviously there is some feeling that some people do not think it needs to be there, and others do. So in order to be fair, we will have a motion as to whether it should be put in the minutes of the meeting or not, and then we can vote on it. And then it will be a parliamentary decision, and it will, those, if they feel it should be in there, will get a chance to say so, and those that feel it won't will also get a chance to say so.
So
that's
fair. We're making up rules of procedure right now, and we're making up...
No.
We're making up a rule that says we're only going to include things relevant to an agenda item, and we're only going to vote on it if people have strong feelings.
You made a request. Obviously, other people of the board do not feel that the request is appropriate. So we're going to decide by a vote as to whether the request is appropriate or not. How else are you going to handle a difference of opinion, Scott?
To me, this isn't even a question of a difference of opinion. We had...
Well, it obviously is, because others do not agree with you. Some others. I don't know how many others.
Well, you know, we as a matter of practice, when there was a big deal made about this last summer, about how when we have things that are on the agenda and things aren't attached as part of the agenda, that people, that causes problems. So we just talked about that email. It should be part of the minutes.
It just sounds like an exercise in vindictiveness. I'm sorry.
I don't see it that way, Chuck.
Well, clearly you don't, but that's the way it seems to me.
Well, okay, but...
Well, wait a minute. Stop. I'm the chair here, and this discussion is going nowhere. So, we have a request from Scott, and I'm going to make a ruling. We have a request from Scott to put the email in the minutes. That being said, we are going to, if there's a motion to include that, we will then vote on that motion, and then we will, and that will give us a decision whether it is correct parliamentary procedure or given procedure or not. I don't know, but we're going to make a decision, a determination, and then it will either be included in the minutes or not, depending upon the vote. So first, I need a motion.
I move that we include Chris Bump's email in the minutes.
And now I need a second. then there is no second. Then we are going to move on to agenda items for next meeting. And there are none, and so I need adjournment motion.
So moved.
Second.
All those in favor, Chuck?
Aye.
John?
Aye.
Steve?
Aye.
Scott?
Aye.
Aye. Meeting adjourned.